the Around the NFL podcast. Predicted this would happen.
Welcome to another edition of the Around the NFL podcast. My name is Dan Hansis, coming to you from a country filled with heroes from different time zones. Greg Rosenthal in California, Ricky Hollywood in New Hampshire. What's up, lady and gentlemen?
Yeah.
Hey, Dan.
Hey, Dan. What's up? This is the ultra rare Thursday night show. You know, a couple things. We had toyed with the idea of doing a third show this week, but there were some complications. I mean, we were going to do our network show. Then they got preempted because NFL Network pulled programming for the Juneteenth celebration on Friday. And then we were thinking, oh, maybe we'll do a third podcast this week to give some content to our fans if we're not going to do a network show. And then we're like, oh, but again, Juneteenth, so we can't do it Friday. But some news popped up on Thursday today. And Greg, it just felt like the right thing to do rather than let this news just get stale through Friday and then through the weekend. So we're going to hit on a few things going on in the NFL world that are somewhat important to very important, varying levels.
And you missed me. You wanted to see me on Zoom. You wanted to see Erica looking like a lobster ready to be served at some New Hampshire tourist trap or something like that. You are red, Ricky.
I am so burnt that even colorblind Greg can see it.
It's true.
What? This is not the first time this has happened, Erica, and you need to take care of your skin.
I really
do. Not only because of the very real dangers associated with ultraviolet rays, but also just, you know, as a woman, you don't want to get just bad skin. Like, you know,
yeah,
man. Women, I know my wife, she highly values, you should see what's going on in like the bathroom and in the shower. She's got all sorts of lotions and things. Come on, let's clean this up.
Yeah,
I've
seen it. It's crazy.
Yeah, you don't want to be one of those LA kind of white women and, you know, little older who clearly just spend a little too much time on the beach.
Yeah, I'm not trying to be like leathered up, like looking
right,
like.
But this isn't like the first day that you've been like, you know, a fairly pale complexion, you know, woman living in the sun. Yeah, at some point, you gotta take some lessons.
Yeah, I was taking a risk trying to get that base tan, and the SPF 30 didn't cut it.
Mm. Did you ever see Something About Mary, that movie?
I have, yeah.
Do you remember Cameron Diaz's live-in friend?
Yes.
That's where you're heading if you don't clean this up.
Oh, no.
Magda, maybe? Or thinking
it's like a baseball mitt.
All right. So Ricky's here. She's alive.
Barely.
She's going to stay out of the sun.
And this is how you feel alive, Dan. I mean, that's the reason we're here. And I'm the same way. Like, you know, we have all these days between podcasts. It's nice to think about, okay, we have time off with our families. But the only time we really feel alive is when after that record button hits.
Oh, absolutely. I feel that 110%. And especially when the big news story is about my favorite player wanting to get, or my favorite best player on my team wanting to get the hell out of town. But that's the world we live in. So before we dive into this ATN podcast news after dark edition, let's throw it officially to the news sector with a nice drop from Ricky Hollywood.
Oh, I guess I forgot my code.
They ain't cut.
Yes, they did. They must have cut me already since year two.
Yes, more innocent times for Jamal Adams, the great safety of the New York Jets, who a couple years back, that was him being locked out of the Jets facility, and it was all fun and games. But the fun and games are over. ESPN's Adam Schefter reports that Adams wants a trade. He wants out of New York. He's unhappy with the status and tenor of the contract extension talks with the Jets. Doesn't believe they're being upfront with him, believes the Jets are dragging their feet. So he wants out. Actually, it was ESPN's Rich Cimini with the original report. He's informed the team he wants to be traded. Schefter later followed up that Adams would welcome a trade to seven teams, including the Ravens, Cowboys, Texans, Chiefs, Eagles, 49ers, and Seahawks. Greg, why are you laughing?
Well, just a shot in the, you know, in the face of the Patriots at this point. They can't even get on this list of like would be contenders. I assume that's the thinking that he have. I like how these stories now evolve, because I think his Instagram response to a fan came first, and it was like, ooh, does Jamal Adams want to be traded? And then, you know, within hours, there's a national report. Yes, indeed, he's officially asked for it.
Yeah, and we've talked about it on this show that he is in the third year, or he's entering the third year. Correct? Yes, he was a 2017 first-round pick. So he's entering the fourth year of his rookie contract with the Jets, which means the Jets have contract control over him this year. Next year, when they would inevitably, if they didn't do a new deal, pick up the fifth-year option. And then beyond that, even if they wanted to keep him around and did not want to extend him with a longer deal, that would be 3 years of team control the Jets have. Jamal Adams wants nothing to do with that, and believes his status as one of the best safeties and arguably the best safety in football means he gets to rip up his rookie contract. And I don't think, Greg, this is happening. And tell me if you agree. If Christian McCaffrey doesn't get the deal from the Panthers, I don't think Adams would feel as emboldened, put it that way, if there wasn't some evidence of someone from his draft class that had outperformed his contract already getting paid. I wonder if that is in play here. What do you think about that?
Yeah, he mentioned in that Instagram response to just some Jets fan who got put on blast. Poor Jonathan Abrams out there, same name as the Raiders safety. He used McCaffrey as an example. He used Mahomes, having his negotiations as an example. And Adams puts himself in that class, and he should. And this kind of happens every year with guys, on their rookie deal entering the fourth year. That's the time that the really great ones get paid. So that's not out of ordinary. What is out of ordinary is that we're going through a pandemic right now, and there is some thought that contracts are not being done in part because the NFL brass wants to see what shakes out here. Because, yeah, McCaffrey got his money, but that's been about it. There's been almost no long-term deals signed for young veteran players, certainly not from that draft class done, since the big free agency push. And I think that is a factor. And Adams is frustrated that he believes the Jets are maybe hiding behind that. He mentioned that in the post too. But I also think it's like this is what's going to happen. If you're a third-year safety looking for huge money, like it would be shocking if that deal was done before the week before training camp. I mean, that's just what happens. It's like deadlines spur actions is the cliche. And it's like, it's not surprising that the Jets are dragging their feet a little bit in the middle of June. I'm not going to kill the Jets for this, put it that way.
Yeah. If you'd allow me here, Greg, just to get my thoughts out there on this, because I love Jamal Adams. I love the guy. I love the way he plays. I love the way he carries himself. I love the passion on and off the field. He's obviously, a foundational piece for them. I love him, but I don't like how he's handling his business here. And I think he's got this twisted and it's poisoning the well. I, as a Jets fan of a certain age, I remember a similar type situation happening with Keyshawn Johnson once upon a time, a great player, maybe not at the highest premium position, but he wanted to get paid and didn't, and ended up getting to the point where the Jets had to make a move and they traded Keyshawn when he was in his prime too. And I think this all started when the Jets answered the phone, and there are, I guess, disputing reports in this, but there was a phone call. Joe Douglas, I guess, had a chance to tell the Cowboys last season that Jamal Adams is totally off limits. But instead he listened to what the Cowboys had to say. And nothing ever came of it. Doesn't sound like there was anything close to a deal happening. And you could say, oh, bad business by the Jets to ever pick up the phone there. Same old Jets. What a joke. But I don't see anything wrong with listening to an offer, having a dialogue. I think Joe Douglas seems like a smart guy that knows how this game works. And I think Adams is naive, to be honest, to the realities of the sport in terms of how he thinks he should be viewed. I mean, he's a strong safety, and he's kind of putting himself in the same place as Patrick Mahomes, a guy when he talks about Mahomes, and I know McCaffrey as well, who's off to a record-breaking start to his career. And I just think safety, when you look at it, is not a premium position. It will never carry the same value or status as a quarterback or a cornerback or a left tackle or a dominant edge rusher. And I don't want to like denigrate what Adams is or what he means or what he can be. But I just think given the global pandemic, given the contract control that the Jets have, and the pandemic, like you said, it could be a salary cap big time issue for the Jets. If they extend him to a big deal, they could put himself in a situation. Why would the Jets ever do that? Why would they ever put themselves in that situation in this time of uncertainty? And he wants to be the highest paid player on the Jets, Samini reported. He wants to be higher than that would be. He wants to be paid higher than CJ Mosley. And that's $17 million a year. Well, guess what? CJ Mosley stayed healthy. He played out his rookie deal, got to free agency, and got $17 million. That's how this works. So go do it. Stay healthy. Keep balling out and you'll get paid. I don't like this. And it's going back to the same thing with Jalen Ramsey, Greg, last year. I see where this is going. And everyone, especially in the media, and I don't want to sound like some pro-ownership guy, but it's the player that's right, the ownership's wrong, always. But this idea that a player can be a star and then hold a team hostage when he's under contract, I just don't think it's a good look. I love the guy. I love him, but I don't think it's a good look.
Well, I don't think he's holding them hostage. He's making it uncomfortable for
fans. Not yet, but it's getting there. And it's heading in that direction.
He's making them uncomfortable publicly. But that's his leverage. You know, he's not missing anything. And if he misses some training camp, whatever. Like that, I'm not really, you know, I wouldn't be worried about him long term. I think if I was a Jets fan, the concern would be this has been bubbling for a while. And so the whole trade rumors thing, I don't think started with Joe Douglas. It felt like it started with Jamal Adams. Like it felt like his agent has been pushing this idea of either getting out of New York or he needs to, you know, priming the pump that he needs to get this big time deal sooner than later. And that goes back even to last year, because it seemed like Adams was already, you know, having, I don't know if it was mixed feelings or whatever, that his agent is playing two sides of the fence here. And that's his job to do. I wonder what the back and forth, like the background info is, because the part where I would disagree with you is like, third year, you know, great players like him going into his fourth year get huge contracts all the time. Happens all the time. Happens every year. So that's like par for the course.
Safeties.
I mean, it's a unique thing. I'd have to go back.
It's part of the conversation.
Yeah, but whether he like is resetting the safety market or not. Yeah, that makes, I'm not saying it's not complicated. It is complicated because the fifth year option ultimately I think is bad for players that are as good as Jamal Adams. Cause that's like another bit of leverage against him that maybe isn't like totally his worth, but yeah, I would say all pro players get big time extensions going into their fourth year. And I kind of figured he's going to get his extension going into his fourth year. And if I had to guess, I still would guess he would get his extension from the Jets going into his fourth year. I want to know like what's happening though for him to blow up like this. And if I had to totally irresponsibly speculate, I guess it's that just nothing's happening. And you know, why else would you be getting this frustrated? Like they don't even want to put a number out there that's going to make him mad. They know the kind of money that he wants, and he's getting radio silence at this point. And then you can see it from his side. It's like, okay, well, do they see me as like the one of the best defensive players in the league? Do they value me that way? Because Joe Douglas didn't draft me. You know, Adam Gase didn't draft.
That's part of this too, I think.
Adam Gase didn't draft me, and that makes it complicated. But it's not like the Jets are getting that. That first, I think they asked for two firsts and a second, Samini.
It was a first and two seconds.
I mean,
ESPN reported.
They didn't get that last year. They're not going to get it this year. They're not going to get it before the season, that's for sure.
Right. I just would hate to see this turn into like a Yannick Ngakoue situation, because like I said, he is such a fun guy to root for and watch play. And I loved Keyshawn Johnson. I used to wear a Keyshawn Johnson jersey at high school, number 19 for the Jets, and that stunk. But you know what? When they did trade Keyshawn, that ended up being a big deal for them that brought back first round picks that built the team for the next decade. So I don't think Joe Douglas is going to look at this and say, I need to cave and trade this guy. No. I would imagine, like you were saying, he didn't draft him either. So it's like, I'm sure he's open to doing business. So we'll see how this all turns out. But
I mean, the pandemic thing, though, is the pandemic thing is like is a real thing. That business is getting clogged up right now. I mean, you see that in all sorts of businesses like that. That is a real thing that I think is going to keep having an impact, you know, as we get closer to training camp. We're still so far away that it's a little surprising to hear this, like right now, like why right now?
Where does he make his home in the off season? Because there's a lot of parts of this country that do not believe there's a pandemic going on anymore.
Well, that's fair. I don't know. He's probably Florida. Who knows?
Is he a Florida guy? Yeah. All right. In other news, bad news for the San Francisco 49ers, who lose one of their most promising young players to a broken left foot. It's Deebo Samuel, who injured himself during a workout with teammates on Tuesday. He's going to be sidelined 3 to 4 months, according to Rap Sheet. It is a Jones fracture. It's that foot fracture that really causes issues, and it's a big timetable. So 12 to 16 weeks he's out, which almost certainly puts him on the PUP list, you would think, and might be a situation if the NFL season plays as scheduled, and who knows, and we'll get to that in a little bit, that it would keep him out probably till sometime in October. Not ideal, and especially with a guy with his skill set as fast as he is, it's a concern, obviously, that he has now a serious foot injury.
He was a guy I thought they were almost counting on a little too much. You know, when you look at their receiver group, and there's a lot of talk about, okay, well, you got Deebo Samuel as your number one, and then you slide in Ayuk, who's their first round pick, and then you have a lot of a bunch of similar guys. You got Jalen Hurd, you got Trent Taylor is coming back, Dante Pettis, who knows, Kendrick Bourne is a pretty good slot guy, but it's like, hey, we got Deebo Samuel as our number one, and I heard that, and I thought, well, here's a rookie who I love watching play. He reminds me a lot of Anquan Boldin, but came on at the end of the year, but maybe not a totally complete receiver yet. And really kind of flashed at the end of the year. And that's the kind of guy a lot of people just project. Suddenly you're going to put up 1400 yards. I don't know if he was going to be at that point in his career. And then you take him away and their receiver right. group isn't too good. I mean, Shanahan always finds a way to scheme it up, and they've got their first round pick, Ayuk. I did like what I saw out of Kendrick Bourne at the end of the year, but otherwise it's like it's a receiver by committee, and it's not a great group.
Yeah, I mean, they have the right coach, like you're saying, to figure this out. Mark, on our last podcast, he was even talking about Kyle Shanahan could end up being one of the best coaches ever. At the very least, he's one of the top minds in the league right now, so you would think he's going to be able to find something, or they're going to go out and get somebody. It makes me wonder, I think their cap situation is pretty tight, but maybe Emmanuel Sanders was a guy they should have thought about trying to keep in the building, who instead went to the Saints on not a very big deal, as I recall. Maybe it was 2 years, not anything too crazy. That would have given them some more depth and wouldn't leave them as vulnerable as they appear to be here. They still have, of course, George Kittle as well. So it's not like they're completely up Poops Creek right now, but it hurts for sure.
They let Jimmy Garoppolo throw the ball deep less than any quarterback in the league. Lowest percentage of deep throws. You always make fun of Teddy Bridgewater for his air yards per attempt, Dan.
6 yards.
You know he's even lower? Jimmy Garoppolo, only player in the league that's lower. And Deebo Samuel is a guy that's keeping that low because he's a guy you give him to him short and you hope he runs long. But it does make you think like Jimmy Garoppolo's got to be a part of this solution too, where he makes the receivers around him better. And Kyle Shanahan's managed a way to cook up like a lot of production without big time receivers the last few years. So I figure he'll do it again. But this is a huge loss.
Deebo Samuel from week 10 onward last season was 12th in the league in yardage. So he did really come on, but he will
not. It's a lot of pressure on Ayuk. And you mentioned, you know, not signing Samuels. And I think you're right. They had tough decisions to make. They, you know, they had to bring back Arik Armstead. They traded. Sanders. Yeah. They traded Buckner in part because of the cap space. And I think, you know, because of the trades that they made, they decided, hey, we're going to use our draft, you know, capital on receiver instead of spending money on receiver. Ayuk was like the one guy who he very much had draft Twitter split. And I was not a fan. I'm not like a big draft Nick, but I did look at like the top eight or nine guys. And he was the one guy I was like, man, I don't see it. Kyle Shanahan is a lot smarter than me. To me, he seemed like a poor man's Deebo Samuel. And so they'll have him try to fit that role.
God, I would have loved for you to go up to Shanahan at the scouting combine and say, I do not know what you see in this guy.
I would like to know. Just tell me like what it is. I don't get it. I'm not smart.
All right. And we're talking about the 2020 season, but who knows if there's going to be a 2020 season. There continues to be a lot of concern, and rightfully so, about how the ongoing coronavirus pandemic could affect the NFL season or even wipe it out entirely. And Dr. Anthony Fauci, the director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, and one of those dudes in the White House that you can trust. People like Fauci, believe in what he has to say. Well, he told CNN this week that football players would need to be isolated from others and tested regularly to make this work. Here's what he had to say. Unless players are essentially in a bubble, insulated from the community, and they are tested nearly every day, it would be very hard to see how football is able to be played this fall. If there is a second wave, which is certainly a possibility, and which would be complicated by the predictable flu season, football may not happen this year. Pro basketball, if you're paying attention, the NBA is going down to Orlando, Florida, or at least that's the plan, and putting themselves in a bubble. But that's a 2-month playoff structure with only some of the teams involved, and the teams will dwindle, obviously, throughout the postseason. NFL, totally different deal. I don't even Fauci, man, I love Fauci, but I don't even know, you throw something like that out there, it's not feasible. We're talking about thousands of people for a 3 to 4 month season. I don't even know how this is a solution.
Well, I think he was, you know, if you listen and read all of it, you know, I think he was trying to say if a second wave comes, it's like the virus doesn't care about the NFL. So if you want me to just be honest, you know, if you're proud, like the virus isn't going to be on the NFL's schedule. And so he's thinking in terms of the bubble. I thought he maybe meant like within sort of each team, like they're in their own cities and they're trying to stay as contained, you know, just team practicing together and everything. But then you, of course, have the issue of traveling and playing the other teams. And we're seeing it right now. Not that we're experts and not that we have any idea where this is going, but that's sort of the point, that the places that were the worst in March, like New York City, are in great shape right now in terms of the coronavirus. I mean, right. The cases there are down so much. And some of the places that were in good shape early on, like Florida and Arizona and where you are, Texas, are getting worse. And it's not even the second wave that people have been talking about in all these places. It's the first wave. California, which has done a decent job where we're at, has just been a slow uptick climb this whole time. I mean, my kids, Walker's school, preschool is reopening next week. And it's just interesting to think about, because right now the cases are a little higher than they've ever been, you know, and it's not right. The mindset people are in, and people have figured out how are we going to live around this? Cause you can't say that you're just going to stay locked in your house, but I mean, the NFL season just to me requires so many things happening that some skepticism is understood. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Ben Volin for the Boston Globe, he wrote a story in reaction to this, and he brought up some reporting he did last month where he spoke with 7 infectious disease experts, 2 former NFL doctors and 1 former NFL team trainer, about what it will take for the NFL to play this fall. None of them thought a bubble scenario was feasible.
Right.
They said their consensus was that a combination of frequent testing and quarantining plus strict social distancing inside team facilities could mitigate the spread of the virus enough to allow the NFL to make it through a season. That to me, and you're right, I'm not an expert. Nobody on our podcast is, but that's the only way this is going to work. I mean, you're going to take the fans out of the stadium. That's a no brainer. And then you're going to have to test regularly, because there isn't an option B here. There's no other way to make it happen. There's no big bubble. You can't pull that off. Right. And this one's got me a little shook. I got to be honest with you. Fauci coming out and saying that and seeing these cases on the rise this week, how it's starting to become a bigger and bigger story that this was supposed to be the quiet down time in the summer. And instead it feels like it's ramping up. It feels like a coin flip to me right now.
Well,
that's how it feels.
Well, I think it's one of the most important parts of this story was that the NFL chief medical officer, Dr. Alan Sills, and the NFLPA. So this is a case where the NFL players and the NFL medically are on the exact same page. Both of them released a statement today, and they said essentially that they respect Dr. Fauci, but the issues that he's been talking about, first of all, the bubble, I think they recognize is not feasible, but they have been developing a protocol that we've heard a report from our reporters, Tom Pelissero and Ian, that they're going to test three times a week, that they've had some protocols and they're going to come out with more of them, that they've been working on this, and that is the best way that, you know, working with the White House, the CDC, other sports league, that it's not going to be easy, but that they, you know, they're coming up with the protocol to get this done, and they think they can do it. I just wonder that, and it's true when I think about the restaurants and everything, sometimes it's like, it's less about the businesses and like, can they figure out a way to do it? It's just like, can our country? It's like, if the country can get it under control in some way, like a lot of other countries, like most, you know, like most of the like industrial world, like, are doing a better job. Like if the country can do it, then everything can happen. But if the country's in terrible shape, the NFL is in the country and it's part of the country. And so it's like, it's a bigger issue. It's on some level, it's unrealistic to expect the NFL to, you know, figure this out. Yeah, it's a greater societal thing than that the NFL can figure out.
And I think one thing that's kind of under the radar, and it's obvious, but also sometimes you don't even think of it, is how big this country is,
right,
and how big it is compared to other countries. And that's why, you know, you have all these different areas, hotspots in this vast, you know, 3,000 mile across country. And it's going to be hard, you know, and the NFL teams are spread out all across the country. So we're going to see what's going to happen with this. I did see Ricky just flashed it up on the screen here that I do like the COVID-19 helmets. I don't know if that's a real thing.
I don't think that was a real thing. Everyone went nuts about that.
Forever.
Yeah, I don't think that.
They look amazing. I hope it's something, because everybody would look like fighter pilots, like badass Airwolf pilots. Let's hope that happens. That would be something good that comes out of this. All right.
Neil Reynolds is concerned. He was like, what is going on there in the U.S. right now? Like, are they going to be able to figure this out? Because I think, you know, the Premier League's back. You know, the U.K.'s, you know.
And what are they doing?
The U.K. per capita.
Follow their model.
Right. The U.K. per capita has had more deaths than the U.S. But their wave kind of came and, you know, and it's died down. And they're already playing, you know, pro sports again. And their cases are microscopic compared to where we're at. And you said it all it takes is like a couple cities where there are teams, and that becomes a big problem.
And, you know, wear a mask. Will you wear a mask? You listening, are you wearing a mask? Wear a mask.
Well, not, you don't have to wear one to listen to us. You know, if you're,
you know what, wear it to listen, but just get used to it. It might take some time apparently, because some people, according to the Walmart that I'm near or here in Texas, you know, it's not even a thing. Ricky, we playing football in the fall? Yes or no?
Yes.
All right, good. Well, see, I was getting nervous and now I feel better.
You should.
You know, the one, you know, plus Ricky, if you want to be like petty about it, is like, you know, wouldn't it be funny if like, you know, Brady and Gronk don't even get to play for the Bucks? You know?
You're sick.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good way to look at it.
It's a joke. It's a bad joke.
You're a sick man, Greg. Because I know you actually do think about
it. No, that. I do not. The last thing I want is no football. Please. Please. I am joking. That I
it's like a Patriot transition season. You'd wipe that out. That wouldn't have ever happened.
Stop.
Stidham never has to be the pretend quarterback.
It's gallows humor, but it's fair to be worried.
All right. That's what's happening in the news. Before we go, Greg, let me just... we talked about it on Monday's show when we were predicting some team MVPs. And now both the AFC and the NFC columns are up on NFL.com. If you want to check out the Zeusers predictions, congratulations. Leighton Vander Esch leads the column.
Wow. And,
well, he doesn't, it's not like he gets eight graphs off the top, but I go by division and the Cowboys are up first. And they put, I don't know why, but the editors moved it up and put Dallas first, even though they didn't win the division. I don't know why it worked out that way. And then the way it turned out, I start the blurb by Around the NFL with this. Around the NFL podcast colleague Greg Rosenthal put it well in a recent write-up on key homegrown players.
Wow.
And then I jacked your Sean Lee point. So the fact that you actually lead the column is a little bit annoying to me, but you know, it also shows what a big man I am. To give you the credit you deserve. Let me throw a couple more team MVP sneaky ones at you. Tell me if you like it. Miles Sanders in Philly.
That's fun. I think you could have it with the lack of receivers. Yeah.
Did you know that he had over 1,600 all-purpose yards last year?
That was a different player down the stretch. I think they are really excited about Miles Sanders, so that's a good one.
Let's see. I have Kenny Golladay with the Lions. How about Golladay and Matt Stafford getting 16 games in a contract year for Golladay, and he goes nuts. Here's the fun fact. Only Mike Evans averaged more than 16.7 yards per reception. That's what Golladay's put up since 2018. He's ahead of Tyreek Hill. He led the league in touchdown catches last year.
He's due for a new contract, if I'm not mistaken.
He is.
People kind of sleep on how good Stafford played in a new system with Daryl Bevel, who had been shamed out of Seattle, actually was off to a great start in Detroit.
Let's see. And one more with the Rams. You know who I'm throwing out there? Cooper Kupp.
Yeah.
Cooper Kupp quietly in what was a bummer season for the Rams and the offense. He went 94-1110. And that was his first season off an ACL tear.
I got to stop worrying about ACLs, because if you look at some of the highlights Cooper Kupp had last year, you hear those reports sometimes in training camp. It's like, he looks better since his ACL. He's more explosive. And it's like, yeah, he was. Some of the plays he made after the catch, which is not, you know, what you first think of with Kupp, were just ridiculous last year.
We'd have to get like a physical therapist on to find out about the different levels of an ACL tear. Maybe he had like a more simple one, who knows? Or maybe he's just gifted that way. But you have Brandon Cooks now out of the picture. Robert Woods is great, and he's a target monster, but he doesn't find the end zone. Kupp, you could see him in year four. A lot of these guys around this age, around year three or four. That kind of makes sense. They're in their prime. So.
And has a legit sort of Edelman to Brady vibe with Goff.
Yes.
Where they truly are on the same page.
Great chemistry.
He truly does make them better. I appreciate the link. It reminds me of our old, you know, Around the NFL blog. We used to call it a blog? You know, it was like our blogging days.
We struggled with what to call it. Yeah.
Yeah. It was
we
like
didn't
a new,
like to call
a
it a blog,
page.
But it kind of was a blog. Yeah.
You know, I don't know if you know what blogs are, Erica, but, you know, Dan and I both came up, you know, well before we were at the NFL. Just writing.
Yeah, you guys are big
blog
bloggers.
Posts.
Yeah.
It was
pretty
big time
cool.
To just, you know, you'd link out to the other sites and then you'd track who was linking to you. And it was just sort of like a beautiful symbiotic
like
blogging community, you know?
Yeah, like Tumblr. You seem like a big Tumblr guy.
I did not have a Tumblr, but I did have a blog spot. And it was a baseball blog.
Go figure.
Nice. Nice. That's cool, guys.
Don't bring up baseball either. I can't deal with all this negativity in my life right now.
There's so much. Ugh.
Hey, Ricky, take care of yourself.
Thank you. There. You too. Let us know.
We're not here. No, but I'm focusing on you here. We can't watch after you when you're on the other side of the country and you're just baking in the sun.
You're right.
Doing God knows what.
Yeah.
Just take care of yourself.
Thank you. Yeah. And before we sign off, any news on the interview front?
Yes. The wheels are in motion.
Okay.
Whoa.
The wheels are in motion.
Actually, the interview with the local paper. Are you still in Gatesville? Or
no, I've moved on to Kingsland, Texas, which is a really nice kind of almost like a vacation town on Lake LBJ. So it's about 90 minutes away from Gatesville. I've moved on. However, I will be circling back to Gatesville next week. And yeah, the wheels are in motion. In fact, the sport, the guy that writes the sports for the Messenger, Gatesville Messenger, is aware that I'm available. Now, I don't know if he knows about my demands yet. And let's go over the demands again before I grant the interview. I want the front page. I don't want the sports section. I want the front page. I want a photo. And they don't have to send a photographer. I'll send one that I'm happy with.
Okay.
And I'll send them, and they could use that. And then I'll grant the interview. So we'll see where the negotiations go.
Wow, I'm on the edge of my seat.
Like aware, like there's an inbox, you know, there's an email in his inbox, or you know,
no,
there, know he's even taking this seriously. He might think, who's this guy coming in here from out of town?
There's a
demanding.
I'll tell you what it was. It was a text exchange between my wife's friend and the sports writer.
Okay,
and then he asked for more information, and then she sent some bio info to him. So it's on his plate. And it's up to him now what he wants to do with it.
If we had that Stitcher award from 2016, you could send him that, send a picture of that, but it's missing.
Yeah. I don't know what happened with that Stitcher, but it's gone.
iTunes right. Best of new podcast 2016. Come on.
So tune back in Monday. Yeah, it's been a while. It's been a minute since we've been recognized by the
greater by the powers that be.
Community. Yeah. All right. Check back in Monday for an update on the Gatesville Messenger situation. By the way, it's a biweekly publication.
Ooh.
So I don't know if that helps or hurts, but that's what it is. Stan Hans is signing off for the old boss and Ricky Hollywood in New Hampshire. Enjoy your weekend, everybody. Till Monday. We'll be right back.